Welcome to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. This is a show for listeners wanting to learn more about the ins and outs of the securities brokerage landscape. Each episode will feature insightful conversations with the world's leading investment bankers, placement agents, capital providers, startup CEOs, and more. Let's get into the show. All right, Zach, well, welcome to the Pencils Down podcast. Excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Fed. It's great to speak to you again, and I'd love to talk to you about all the topics in fintech and capital markets.
Amazing. Well, I usually start by asking our guests to share a little bit about their path into capital markets. Very curious to hear a little bit more about your story and what led you to Main Street.
Sure. So I started actually more on the technology side. If you scroll all the way back in my LinkedIn profile, I'm an MIT computer science nerd at heart. So after doing all that programming training, building some of the early tools of the media-rich internet in Japan, building some of the early trading tools for Credit Suisse, I went back to business school and sort of moved over to capital markets. Joined Deutsche Bank, did trading of consumer mortgage securitized credit through the financial crisis, building out structured finance there and at MUFG, and really was on Wall Street on the sell side doing structured credit, structured finance, securitized products for over a decade. A few years back, I transitioned over to the fintech world, first running capital markets for a fantastic fintech, Climb Credit, provides student loans to the alternative education and career education space. And then I joined Main Street last year to build out its capital markets muscle. So it's been a journey sort of from technology to Wall Street and now to the intermediary point in the fintech world.
Well, I'd love to learn a little bit more about these transition moments, because I think that you can learn a lot about how somebody thinks about their career in line with making those leaps. So let's start with maybe the first leap from the technology world into capital markets. You know, what were the insights or what was the thinking that informed, you know, a decision to take the leap from hardcore tech, you know, kind of being an MIT guy to diving into banking?
Sure. So there's a saying in Japan, koketsu ni irazumba koji o ezu, which means literally, if you want to catch the tiger cub, you have to enter the tiger cave. So sort of like no risk, no reward. When I was building trading systems for Credit Suisse, you know, I was working on the trading floor with traders, and ultimately it seemed like a greater challenge and a greater path for me to be sort of driving the Formula One race car rather than building it. So that was really what motivated me to make that transition.
It makes a ton of sense. And then tell me a little bit about that second transition. So you're in banking and now you're looking at this fintech zeitgeist. What encouraged you to take the leap?
Well, so that was a more interesting point. So I was with MUFG Securities as a director in structured finance, joined them in 2015. And 2017 came around and I was looking at the world and the community I lived in and decided to run for Congress here in New York's 11th district. At the same time, I was working at MUFG. That was a fantastic experience. Certainly another example of sort of rushing towards challenges. But long story short, I didn't come out on top in the primary election and was out of MUFG. So in the summer of 2018, I really had a sort of pause in my career. And then I really enjoyed working on the trading floor environment of Wall Street banks. I like the pressure. I like the camaraderie. But, you know, given my career history, which was more, I would say, broader than deeper, the opportunities on banks was somewhat limited. At the same time, so many of my colleagues from Deutsche Bank and MUFG had moved on to the SoFis and the Pedals and the other fintech name brand companies. And I heard just such great things about working in fintech. Then given my background in technology and programming, it just seemed like a natural next step for my career. And I really haven't looked back since. I think it's certainly a very different work environment, but if you like a multitude of challenges, if you like pitching in to different parts of the business from working with product, working with engineering, working with strategy, working on business development, working with legal and compliance, it's a fantastic place to be.
So tell me a little bit about capital markets at Main Street and kind of what the scope of a capital markets function at Main Street looks like.
Sure. So I think to back up first, Main Street is a really exciting fintech that started about 2.5 years ago. And our mission is simple. We're trying to empower startups and small businesses that ultimately will create jobs and opportunities across the US. When Main Street launched, you know, and really started growing in leaps and bounds in early 2020, the flagship product was based around actually tax credits, finding tax credits for companies programmatically and algorithmically in for the startups and small business world. And if you think about it, you know, the big tech companies have cadres of lawyers and accountants to pull every single cent they can from the government. But there's actually, you know, billions and billions of dollars of tax credits that are basically not taken by startups and small businesses because they're startups and small businesses and focused on their alpha and making business. So Main Street, overall, we're trying to save startups time, we're trying to save them money, and we're trying to save them peace of mind within that space. Capital markets within Main Street started off with that tax credit product where we're signing up customers to save them maybe $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, sometimes more based on their R&D expenditures on tax credits. And we had certain financial products related to that that required capital partners. So the typical fintech world work where you're securing warehouse lines or forward flow agreements to sort of provide the capital for that business to go forward. As we've grown, both in terms of the success of Main Street itself, we raised a $60 million Series A in the first quarter of last year, grown in size. We've also grown, of course, in products and services to customers. And that's where the sort of capital markets needs to sort of grow with it. And then that's grown over the past few months into a new sort of whole division within Main Street called Treasury Management, of which Main Street Yield is our flagship product, basically to offer startups and small businesses more yield than they can get on their idle cash in sort of traditional outlets.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like this is a classic come for the tool, stay for the exchange type playbook that Main Street is executing, where, you know, there's captive distribution in the form of thousands of corporate customers of Main Street across the country. And there's an opportunity to basically leverage that strategic positioning into cross-selling interesting, you know, structured product. Tell us a little bit about this Main Street Yield product, how it works, and maybe some, you know, early indications of how it seems to be performing with your existing customers.
Sure. So, you know, Main Street Yield is probably the thing I've worked on at Main Street that I'm proudest of. It launched last month, and the bottom line of it is it's a product to give our small business customers access to the same yield opportunities that big businesses are taking advantage of all the time now. You know, if you take a step back, when we raised our Series A last year, of course, there's the excitement of raising the money, but then the money hits your bank account and it feels kind of itchy to look at a 0.25% APY on it when it's sitting there. Because obviously, like any, you know, Series A, any seed, Series B and so forth company, we had growth plans, but not an immediate need for every single dime of that cash. And so like with a lot of our products, it started with our own problem. Like, wouldn't it be great if on this pool of idle cash, we earned something more, we could earn something more. And so we start digging a little deeper, and it turns out a lot of our customers, you know, similar to us, they've raised a Series A, they've raised a Series B, they have a bunch of cash, and they just feel underserved in terms of the options they have to do with it. They don't maybe have the expertise or the time to focus on that issue. So we dug into it. Main Street Yield is a result of a huge team of colleagues working on it, from legal to product to engineering, putting everything together. And ultimately, you know, while in the marketplace, you'll see other providers that sort of play fast and loose with regulatory interpretations and whatnot, we really wanted to build something that was buttoned up, solid, and would get a stable ROI for our small business customers' money while sort of minimizing the risk as much as possible. You know, Fed, we're not a bank, but our small businesses' customers bank on us to handle their funds is how I'd sum it up.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story and a very good reflection of the innovation opportunities in capital markets in the fintech context. I mean, Finalis is actually a client of Main Street's, and I should have probably said that up front. but Finalis has been a happy customer of Main Street's for the last 2 years. So I think we were relatively early customers, I guess that would make us.
Absolutely. I think of you not just a customer, as a friend, Fed.
No, I appreciate that very much. There's such a shortage of different approaches to innovation in the capital market space. We're obviously tackling it from a more of a regulatory and compliance perspective, but I think this is one of those spaces in kind of the traditional capital markets where, startups like ours, that where there's tremendous opportunities for us to support one another's as thought partners as we continue to move forward. As you think about capital markets specifically within Main Street, I've just been curious because Finalis is in the process now of setting up our own capital markets team, and it has raised questions from an organizational design perspective that I'd be curious to get your thoughts on. So specifically on the Main Street Yield product that you've now rolled out, I wonder what the touch points look like within Main Street as it relates to the interactions between capital markets and the product and engineering team. Because clearly the product and the engineering team are accountable to a product and engineering organization, but to what extent are they also accountable to the capital markets team within the company? And how do you configure how the product and engineering professionals within Main Street interact or interface with someone like yourself?
That's a great question, Fed. And I think that's something that a lot of fintech players wrestle with, because traditionally the product team comes from a background of product as a website or web service rather than financial product. So both here and prior roles, I believe that part of the reason we can be successful in this interaction is the capital markets team has to sort of step up and think more in product development terms. Frankly, like a traditional capital markets team is a team that faces investors, faces the market, and doesn't think about the other pieces. But that model just won't work when you're in a fintech company of 50, 100, 150 people. You have to sort of meet in the middle. And thankfully, Main Street's assembled a fantastic team in every department. And so these types of cross-functional collaborations have really worked out pretty well.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And so if we were to look at kind of what Zach's OKRs are as opposed to the product team that has been assembled to support, for example, the Yield product that you've put together, to what extent does this cross-functional group share the same set of key objectives as it relates to a given set of products? Are those objectives defined as capital markets objectives? To what extent are they also defined as kind of product and engineering focused objectives?
I think ultimately we'd actually define them as objectives for our customers. Like, I think it's easy in everyday life to always be focused on the problem ahead of you, the problem on my task list. But we try to always step back and say, what's best for the customer? What's best for the small business? Because as little time as we have, a founder of a startup has even less time.
Right.
The ultimate measure, I think, thankfully, in the Main Street Yield product is, are customers willing to invest some of their idle cash in the product, like the assets under management? And, since we launched in last month, we've been growing that steadily. So to me, that's the barometer of success. And, not getting caught up in sort of squabbles over whose credit it is. I think it's really a whole team credit here at Main Street.
Yeah, no, it makes a ton of sense. And I think it's also a reflection of how we're trying to structure things internally where, clearly there needs to be a capital markets team. Much of the value of that capital markets piece will be borne out through the product and engineering team's ability to execute along the lines of what the capital markets team helps to define. But ultimately, the end beneficiary is additional value to the customer. And so I think that there's going to be more and more cycles around trying to identify exactly the right way to configure these types of cross-functional teams within fintechs in the future. And I really do see, even the definition of this role in this new set of products within Main Street as kind of a reflection of what we can start to see more of within other fintechs in the days to come. It's a very exciting development. Tell me a little bit about something that you might have tried at Main Street, the results of which could have surprised you, or resulted in something that you didn't quite expect or anticipate?
Sure. Well, I guess the biggest surprise so far has been, if I focus in on Main Street Yield, the excitement and interest expressed by small businesses in these yield opportunities, because some of the opportunities do touch into the DeFi world, the decentralized finance world. And, you know, like, so as I explained earlier, I come from a fixed income, a credit trading background, where when you approach a new asset class or a new problem, you really run it through the ringer, you know, and try to look for every risk, every angle. But I think within the startup founder community, obviously a lot of these men and women are in their 20s and 30s, and they just have a lot more of a comfort level with, you know, internet banking, decentralized finance, alternative assets, the digital asset space. And actually, we've had some of the of our customers, when they look at our flagship offering, which is really on the sort of vanilla conservative end of the yield liquidity risk spectrum, we've had some of our customers say that sounds great, but it's a little bit tame. I'd rather, you know, be in the middle range of yield liquidity risk and earn 2 points more, 3 points more of interest. So I guess that's that sort of comfort level, which is fantastic, has been a surprise. Then you step back. Why is that the case? I think it's really two things. Part of it is a feeling among small businesses that they're sort of falling behind the big tech players, because these big tech players, as I said, they have big treasury teams. You know, the giant tech companies of the world, they're putting millions of dollars into DeFi to earn these yields with their money. So small businesses who are already at a disadvantage might feel like they're falling behind further on them. And then secondly, it's really just, you know, month after month of looking at a statement that says 0.3% APY, it just sort of kicks you in the gut. I mean, they're asking themselves, why am I locked in the room with all the dirty mops? I want to be in the nice room with the buffet. So I think all of that's been a surprise for the excitement level and the sort of acceptance level of this product, and is really motivating us to grow it and broaden it to meet all of our different customer needs.
Any initial ideas of what might come next or what we might come to expect in the Main Street Yield product?
I think as Main Street Yield will be part of a treasury management sort of suite of products, ultimately we want to take some of the burden of managing a small business's cash off of the founders and startup shoulders. So, you know, the great thing about the capital markets and the private capital markets world we live in now is that there's really a solution for every point on the duration spectrum. You know, if you don't need money for 3 months or 6 months, you can get different solutions. If you're willing to apply monies to different yield opportunities within DeFi, there's solutions there. And it's, you know, there's almost a new solution every month coming up. So what Main Street's value add here is, myself and my capital markets colleagues, you know, and even our engineering and legal colleagues, we're doing the sort of due diligence on all these yield opportunities and really looking at them, like, really how buttoned up are these? And frankly, you know, in as you'd expect with any asset class, there are some even large players that when you go through their docs or their terms of service, you're like, actually, we'll pass on this. So, you know, I think we'll continue to sort of tailor solutions for different liquidity needs, for different risk appetites and comfort levels, from the most conservative to some, obviously some of our startups themselves are in the DeFi space, so they might be even more willing to push the innovation boundaries. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, kind of the last point that you made also, I think, is a reflection of what you can come to expect among earlier adopters to these types of fintech solutions, which tend to be technology companies themselves, right? And just out of my own curiosity, of Main Street's earliest customers, I do suspect that many of them were venture-backed software businesses. Is that the case?
I mean, I haven't done the study. Certainly, you know, there's a percentage of our customers are like that, but, you know, we also have a broad spectrum of customers, from, you know, people starting new coffee chains to biomedical research to you name it. Basically, startups and small businesses are the family that Main Street is part of and that we're trying to help out.
Yeah, no, it makes a ton of sense. Both Main Street and Finalis are companies that have seen quite a bit of scale in the midst of COVID-19 and the pandemic. And one of the things that I was curious about was in better understanding the specific challenges that Mainstream has had to deal with in this particular context. Do you want to shed a little bit of light in terms of how this exogenous shock of the pandemic has been addressed by Main Street?
Well, certainly. I mean, the pandemic started when Main Street was merely a few months old. So we're certainly a sort of pandemic-hardened company. But like I said, we launched our flagship product, the tax credit product, in 2020. And that it was sort of the rocket ship growth of that that sort of has funded all the growth that's come since then. So, you know, I think frankly, as a remote first, a digital first company, you know, we've just been very fortunate to experience tremendous growth during this health crisis, and growth that we've helped pay on to the thousands of fellow startups and small businesses that work with us. Is Finalis also a remote first company?
Yeah, we are. The company didn't start out thinking that it would be a remote first company, but I think we launched our broker-dealer back office product in May of 2020. So the business was being incubated in a more traditional context, but clearly, we had to completely reconfigure the business for the way in which we had to work. And as we've scaled out of expediency, we were focused on hiring the best talent, irrespective of where they happen to be living. I think I suspect that was also the case at Main Street. And I wonder, the extent to which there's going to be a focus to try and consolidate people's geographic presences in the days to come.
So a lot to unpack there. Like certainly I think there's the benefit of for recruiting talent that remote first help that offers us. But it's also if you think about if Main Street had started 5 years earlier, probably some of these businesses would have wanted in-person meetings to talk about tax credit savings and whatnot. So the fact that we're in the pandemic and all of business life was happening remotely probably also saved in terms of just efficiency of sales and acquiring new customers because people realize you don't have to spend, you know, an hour or two to do an office visit just to talk about how we're going to find a small business the free money that they're entitled to from the government. As far as I know, and I'm not the certainly not in the C-suite, but we're going to remain a remote first company, and there's not really any interest in forcing people to go to any offices, which we don't really have many of anyway.
Yeah, I mean and this is one of those areas where I think there's going to continue to be, a lot of discussion around what is the value gained versus what is the value that's being left on the table as a consequence of this. Are there efforts to get people together, even if just on an occasional basis?
Oh, absolutely. Here, so I'm in the New York City area. It's fantastic weather outside, so it would be a great day to actually go to an office. And New York City is one of, I think, the larger hubs of employees in Main Street, coincidentally. And so we do have, and actually we signed this I guess in February. We do have an office in Midtown that's sort of dedicated office space for us. It's voluntary to go in, but if we want to also do get-togethers and whatnot, that's where we would base it for the New York City employees. So I myself, I motorcycle up to Midtown twice a week because I like being around my coworkers. Main Street has a lot of like young and excited talent in its ranks, and it's nice to get those sort of cross-functional conversations going with engineering and operations and sales.
Yeah, no, it makes a ton of sense. And then to what extent has this distributed approach forced upon us by COVID resulted in any changes to how you think about capital markets? I mean, is it just kind of background noise, or do you think that the COVID pandemic had an influence over the course of the capital market strategy at Main Street?
I think I wouldn't call it background noise, certainly a public health event of that significance, but I think the two were probably not that connected. In the end, I would always get back to like with capital markets, we're focusing on what our customers' needs are in terms of products. And so those haven't changed tremendously from my perspective, based solely on the pandemic. We're not dealing as much perhaps with you know, import exporters that would have had supply chain issues, or companies that had a large physical plant set up where the lack of in-person employees would have a problem. So I think in terms of impacting the capital markets function, especially on a day-to-day basis, it hasn't changed tremendously. Much more important is just the broader innovation and growth in the private capital market space, in the alternative asset space, the digital asset space. That's been ongoing for the past 5 years and has only accelerated since the pandemic started. And it's really that type of innovation that we're trying to bring to bear for the benefit of our customers.
Yep, totally fair, and makes a ton of sense. I wonder if you had an opportunity to read David Haber's blog, the Come for the Tool, Stay for the Exchange blog post. You know, one of the things that stood out to me as I was reading the piece was that, you know, clearly there appears to be a strategy here that many fintechs are employing, where they're leveraging kind of an initial wedge tool, which could be compliance in the case of Finalis. It could be tax credit, R&D tax credit advancements in the case of Main Street, but basically a tool that is then leveraged to build out really interesting and exciting marketplace dynamics in the capital markets. Tell me a little bit about how you see this, you know, overall strategy as being aligned or not with the way in which Main Street and the Main Street capital markets team is thinking about its own go-to-market strategy.
Sure. So I did read the piece on the Come for the Tool, Stay for the Exchange. And I guess I have a slightly different take on it in terms of our vision. I might describe it as come for the tool, stay for the relationship. That might be a little bit more how I describe it. You know, when you go to startups and you metaphorically grab them by the lapels and say, we will do the work for you to get you $5,000 or $10,000 or $50,000 of free money, it builds a lot of goodwill with them. And also it helps you, as you do their tax returns, it helps you get a deeper understanding of their financial life. As Main Street continues to grow, we want the experience of working with us to just simply be awesome for founders and startups. We want every startup to think of signing up with Main Street as like an absolute no-brainer, because we'll always be innovating on their behalf. We'll always be finding ways to extend their runway. We'll always be finding ways to save them time and money. And we'll always be presenting these products and services in the most user-friendly way. So is a two-sided marketplace, as was described in that piece, a part of what Main Street's doing? Probably as we grow, it is a piece of our service. But ultimately, you know, we're a startup and a small business too, and we want our family to just want to work with us. And that's to me a little bit more emotionally resonant than purely a marketplace.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with. I mean, at the end of the day, we think about things in Finalis in the context of, you know, first and foremost, what Finalis sells is trust. And we think about, you know, delivering additional value on the basis of a relationship that is built upon trust, and that additional value should then reinforce that trust. And so the flywheel isn't so much around a marketplace as it is around a constant reinforcing of trust through the delivery of additional customer value.
Yeah, and I would just say, like with Main Street Yield, there is in a way a two-sided effect, right? Each of our startup small business customers who are participating in Main Street Yield, you know, they individually might have $2 million or $5 million or $10 million of idle cash that they want to get this yield on. And individually, it would be challenging for them to go to some of these larger institutional players that we talk to get the yield. So in a way, we are bringing together the sort of seekers of yield and the providers of yield, applying the layer of expertise and due diligence that our capital markets team does to match the two in the middle. And so that sort of two-sided marketplace does exist. And, you know, as we grow, we expect that to only benefit us. But I want our customers to really love working with us, not just to share their money with us.
Well, and on that positive note, I wanted to thank you, Zach, and to broader Main Street for your willingness to appear on this podcast.
Of course.
And very much looking forward to continuing the dialogue in the months and years to come. Thanks again for joining us here on Pencils Down.
Well, thank you for having me, Fed. Have a fantastic afternoon and the rest of your hopefully holiday weekend.
Thank you. Finalis is a broker-dealer platform with everything M&A advisors, investment bankers, and placement agents need to succeed. We deliver a broker-in-a-box regulatory affiliation solution, replete with tech-enabled compliance, research and analytics, deal lifecycle management tools, and a first-of-its-kind deal marketplace. Learn more at www.finalis.com. You've been listening to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. Keep connected with us by subscribing to the show on your favorite podcast player. If you like what you've heard, please rate the show. That helps us keep covering the latest in the securities brokerage landscape. Thanks for listening. Until next time.